We were having some technical difficulties here on the Ideas Network, and we finally have those difficulties resolved. I'm very sorry for that. Larry Mueller here. Sorry, because we have lots to talk about today with our two guests, Chad Spade and John Viner. Chad is the owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John is the senior project manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. We're talking with them about home building for extreme weather, and really how you can do a better job of making your home more energy efficient and able to withstand the big changes in heat and cold and wind and rain and all the things that the 100-year storms that now seem to come about every 5 years instead of every 100 years, isn't it, Chad?
Absolutely, yeah.
John, same from you, right?
Yeah, there's certainly a long winter this winter, for sure.
Yeah, and we're going to have a chance for you to call in with your questions, obviously. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. This extreme weather has, it's certainly more the norm than the exception. Chad, what does it mean for home construction?
Well, it's a great question, Larry. I mean, something that we've seen just this year on April 1st in the state of Wisconsin, there are new structural codes that relate to shear walls. And this is no doubt a reaction to the very large insurance claims that have been happening with extreme weather, shear winds, damaging structures. We all know that for 20, 30 years with the hurricanes that hit the coastlines, yeah, the Atlantic coast, we end up with hurricane ties on every building. And, of course, we don't get hurricanes in Wisconsin, but we've incorporated things into our building code nationally to respond to things that are happening where buildings are failing. So this year, there are new shear wall codes, and the easiest way to describe it is any wall on the exterior that has a hole cut in it, which would be your typical wall that has windows and doors. If there's not enough space there to stabilize that wall, you've got to design essentially a post and beam construction within that wall, the appropriate fasteners and brackets, mm-hmm, and posts that go well beyond what most of us think of as a wood frame building, to make it so that that building will not be susceptible to the forces of high winds. And what we're hearing on the street when we go down to pull a building permit or we hear from our other contractors, a lot of plans are being denied. They're having to go back to the drawing board and redesign exterior walls so that they can meet these new codes. So it's an adjustment we're going through, but there's no doubt that this ultimately ties back to the changes we've seen in the weather.
And that's pretty much the high winds, is it? Would precipitation play a role here, or the temperature extremes?
That it is high winds primarily, yeah, that are driving the particular changes in the code right now.
And John, I think as we think about temperature extremes, the kind of energy saving work that we're doing now probably is kind of meeting at least some of that issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So the energy codes in Wisconsin have been pretty constant here for the last several years, while actually states around us, Illinois, Minnesota, have actually been increasing the energy codes and increasing the level of standards for insulation, air tightness, and duct distribution systems. So there is some momentum building to increase, and whether it's weather extreme related, it's just energy conservation as we try to move on to different sources of energy and distributing that energy effectively throughout the region.
Yeah. Are there any inducements or incentives, I should say, that are currently available for energy efficiency replacement, or windows and doors and that sort of thing?
Probably less on the windows side. There's less incentives that way. A lot of the energy efficiency programs within Wisconsin and elsewhere, they do look at return on investment and what's the most cost effective to spend ratepayer or public dollars on energy efficiency programs. So things like air sealing and insulating can often obviously have a more immediate payback on those items. So yes, the focus on energy program certainly has incentives, whether you're building a new house or making a home improvement for furnaces and air conditioning, and obviously the insulation components. So the focus on energy is .com is that resource.
Yeah, excellent. And we have callers online with questions for you, so I want to go to the phones. The number to call if you have a question, maybe you have dealt with some house issues because construction didn't stand up to the extreme weather, or maybe you're willing to pay a little more up front for eco-friendly or energy-efficient construction materials, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. Margaret in La Crosse, thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, good morning, you guys. Well, spring is here, and along with it came, the thawing of the water that was in the ground. So we have a newer home in that's pretty much surrounded with clay. And there was drainage tile put in along with those black hoses that are sort of buried under the ground to take water away from the house.
Mm-hmm.
But we still got water in our basement along the edges so that the rug got damp and things like that. It was clean. It was clear. But my question is, what is the fix for that so that it doesn't happen again? Even though we thought in construction, we had avoided that issue.
Margaret, do you have a sump pump or a sump pit in the basement that's integrated with the drain tile? Do you know?
I don't know that.
Because that might be one way to deal with the water that is collecting in that system that was installed for typically a sump pit is put in somewhere, and oftentimes a builder won't put a pump in it. And then if you have the problem, you can install the pump and pump water out of that system. But if it was not installed, then it is something that can be retrofitted. And we put them into older home basements all the time to help deal with this problem. And then the other thing that you can do on the exterior is to look at how the property was graded and make sure that there's a good positive grade as much as possible away from the home, so that most of the surface water makes its way out away from the foundation prior to it seeping into the ground and potentially causing these sorts of problems.
Yeah.
Okay.
And often we may see even a foot away from the home, around the foundation. It may look like you have a grade or a slope away from the house, but maybe the first foot or two, it's actually a negative grade back to the foundation. It can be deceiving, so taking a close look to know that it's graded all the way up from the foundation wall back to the yard.
Yeah. I remember my parents' home, they had water issues, and we went out and took a look, and the ground had kind of settled by the house, and we added some soil and got the grade right again, and the problem went away.
Yep. If the gutters get clogged during a particular season and it drips right over next to the house a foot away, and it's often a little bit softer there, or it sinks over time, it has to be built up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So now, some neighbors who do have some older homes, they said they too had water for the first time, and they were talking about their downspout or their gutter or whatever the thing that they had. They said that the water froze in those for the very first time that they remember. But I mean, is that a possibility that that there was water in the system that is supposed to take water away that just collected with all the moisture and everything?
Probably not ice in the gutters, because when it's raining, it's all thawed, and it's going to be the leaf and the debris and the tree buds. And
Do you have large trees near the house?
Yeah.
Well, they may. If you haven't checked the gutters, they as John was saying, they may.
Yeah, we clean those out in the fall.
Okay.
Yep, sometimes the spring cleaning, as I get it in the spring as well, they do clog up. So next downpour, put a rain jacket on, walk around each corner and take a look.
It could be that some of the drain tile that's closer to grade may have had some freezing this year that was abnormal, because I know we had water mains coming into property. The laterals were freezing in the Madison area, and this is something that it happens occasionally, but it was happening in you know, very high numbers this year. So,
a few things to think about, Margaret. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. Let me give Sally and Madison a chance to join us. Hi, Sally.
Good morning.
Thanks. Yeah, hi.
I would like to ask a silly, well, I think it's silly, but I live in an old house, and years ago, insulation was put in the attic, and it's insufficient for the current standards. Can I just lay new insulation on top of the old insulation?
Generally, you can insulate over the top of what's existing. So if you, when you mentioned you're going to lay insulation over the top, you're probably visualizing a fiberglass bat that you're going to roll out.
Yep, that's exactly what I was envisioning.
And you have a walk-up attic, or is it just an attic with a hatch that you have to crawl up in there?
The hatch.
So you have a hatch, and you've got enough room you feel you could work around.
Well, I also have a very large animal feed tub in there. It's such an old house that apparently they put a great big old iron tub up there, too.
Oh, my goodness. And you're not going to get it out, are you?
Oh, no.
So before we would, to get the most, so we don't miss opportunities to save energy when we insulate an attic, we do often recommend a blower door test and looking at the air leakage before and sealing the holes up to stop as much air leakage as we can into that attic, so that we do that before we lay all that fluffy, itchy insulation down in the attic floor to really get the most energy saving and comfort gains before we insulate. And and so that's usually hiring somebody with a blower door, a building performance consultant, or an insulating contractor that's actually going to speak the language of building performance. He's going to recommend a blower door test. So when you shop around for and get quotes, if you were interested in doing that, you'd find a contractor that would want to use a blower door and talk about air sealing so that you get the most bang for your buck.
And I just want to add to that, Sally, that we alluded to it earlier. If, you know, some people say initially, well, I don't know if I want to pay that $400 or $500 for an assessment, and you're going to get back quite a bit more, most likely, in focus rewards if some real improvements are made to the home. So you're likely to get back the investment in those quality control measures. And then you'll have a better job that will further lower your utility bill.
Yep, there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking about home building and zeroing in a little bit on in those extreme weather conditions with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Robin Cherry, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Chad Spade and John Viner, as we talk home building for extreme weather and other kinds of conditions as well. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 with your question, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And let's go to Scott and Nina next, who has a question. Hi, Scott.
Hey, let me take you off speakerphone.
Okay.
Hey, I've got an older home built in 1968.
Okay.
Had all the original windows in it, and if you can believe this, there's 28 of them. And they're all in need of replacement. And I'm thinking about either new construction windows with new steel siding versus replacement windows.
Well, there are a lot of great options for insert windows if you're inclined to go that path. Insert windows being a window that's going to go into the sash opening of those 28 openings. You remove the sashes and basically attach it within that opening. The disadvantage to going that path and the reason that you might consider a full tear out is because you are doing your siding. And so that'll give you the opportunity to properly flash each one of those openings and also to air seal around the entire window frame. But, you know, there are a lot of variables to weigh, and there are a lot of cost variables that are tied to those various decisions.
That's one of the reasons why I looked at the new windows and like you say, to a complete tear out, because it's the old siding, the old fiberboard, I guess you want to call it, lap siding. And even the frames of the windows themselves, or I should say like the molding on the exterior, it's bad. It's never been maintained. And I would feel uncomfortable wrapping it.
Right.
And I would want to replace it.
Right.
Because this is the last time this is going to be done, and I want it to last. And that's why we're considering the steel siding as well.
Yep.
Somebody I work for has steel siding, and they love it.
Well, on the issue of a durable window and lasting, the one thing I would recommend is that fiberglass or an extruded fiberglass exterior or an aluminum, a high-quality aluminum clad exterior are generally what we recommend for our clients. I generally discourage vinyl windows or vinyl clad windows simply because vinyl moves around a lot when the temperature changes. And a window and a door needs to seal well. And so if the material itself is expanding and contracting, it's harder to make it so that it seals well when it's closed. And then there are also some durability and strength issues with the product. So that's just our recommendation. But, of course, vinyl is by far the least expensive product. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, we all have to weigh the value or the cost-benefit analysis of a different material. But for long-term durability and performance, a fiberglass exterior is what I would recommend for the windows.
Okay, great. I guess that was my, you know, I was almost certain that was the way to look at it, you know, because that's the way I look at everything, is look at the value. Don't look at the price.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the value. And if you're going to do it one time, do it right. And then not have to worry about it. We had gotten an estimate about a year, maybe 2 years ago, from a window company out of central Wisconsin, and I just about fell over at, you know, close to $30,000 for triple glazed windows installed. And it was funny how the price kept coming down and down and down as the pressure increased to commit to a contract. And I finally actually had to ask him to leave.
Yeah.
So a nice resource for windows, independent resource, is at efficientwindows.org. So they even will have window options and kind of some general costs based on your climate, right? So you can choose your city, your state, and they'll kind of review the options and what the windows characteristics all mean. So they really define it for you pretty well there.
That's great. Right. What is that again?
It's efficientwindows.org. So it's an efficient window collaborative where manufacturers get together, but it is an independent site where they grab that type of information.
Yeah, we're familiar with Focus on Energy. They came through our house and did an awesome job on it. So now it's time to take that next step, and I'm actually even considering, is there one or two of these windows I can eliminate?
Yeah, you know, sometimes that can work too, especially if you're putting new siding on.
Yeah. Yeah, as I like to say, even the most efficient window is still a hole in the wall.
Yeah,
so
there you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Scott. Appreciate it. And good luck. Sounds like you got a few bucks going out, flying out the window, but so to speak. But in the end, you're probably going to be happy. Louis in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Louis.
Okay, we're dealing with insulation in a crawl space. We're in Vilas County. 30 years ago, I used to heat with wood, and it is now propane. And the underflooring is insulated, and it has the plastic flooring. And now since I do the propane thing, there's warm air blown down in there. And a little of the insulation has given way, so that's been reduced, but taken out. But the rest of it will probably go that direction, too, unless it's secured. And I'm wondering whether I should shag a couple of grandsons in there and secure it, or is it probably better off without it?
So I'm going to assume the insulation is in the floor.
One thing I should probably say is that I close up, and I'm closing up earlier now. I usually close up by November, and I'm just about ready to head up there to open up. So I shut the place down completely over winter.
I see. So it's a vacation cabin up north, and the insulation is located in the floor system, right in the wood floor joists, right?
That's correct.
You crawl in the crawl space, you got plastic down there, and we're just trying to make it as efficient as possible.
And it served a good purpose. It did a good job in even those years when we stayed up there longer. We often stayed up to New Year's and heated with wood. But over time, it's very damp down in there, and I try to open it up to air it out.
Sure. So it sounds like
the insulation collects dampness, and then it gets soggy.
Yeah.
So and you mentioned now propane. So is there the ductwork is in the crawl space now? When you said it was blowing around down in the crawl space,
right?
Yeah. So the ductwork. So it's probably poorly insulated or in
great big plastic tubes that run through the course of the crawl space and deliver the heat to the various ducts upstairs.
Right. Right. One option is to move the insulation to the foundation. If you have a concrete foundation wall, a typical strategy is to let's keep that crawl space warmer and hopefully drier because the duct system is down there. So any loss of air out of the ducts, you know, is heating the crawl space and going to heat the house, and the heat can migrate through the wood floor system to the rooms above. And that's a little bit more extensive work and investment than bringing in the grandkids, right?
Yeah.
So bringing in the grandkids and putting that insulation back up on the floor can be a viable option, and I think there's benefits to be had. But we want to know that we aren't blowing that heat into the crawl space under in the cold side of that crawl space from the ductwork, right? So we're looking for complete disconnects or ductwork that's leaky. So we're using a sealant on the duct system or looking at where that flexible duct enters the subfloor, and you have the register. If you pull the register off the floor from the inside and look down there, you don't want to see any daylight or light into that crawl space. So it's more than just putting back up that insulation. It's ensuring that duct system is as tight as you can get it, and all the leaks or daylight that you see around the registers and within the duct system are sealed. And then for that summer or winter, summer cabin, that'd be adequate enough through November.
And I would just add to that, if you did decide that you were willing to go the path of insulating the sidewalls, you don't have to insulate the dirt floor, or is it a cement floor under the
dirt floor?
It's a dirt floor. You don't have to insulate it, but it is definitely a good idea, if you can afford to do it, to put down a very heavy-duty 6 or 10 mil plastic that's going to prevent all that moisture from rising up into the structure and then deteriorate not only the insulation that might still be in the floor, but the structure itself. You know, John is correct. If it's a summer cabin and you just want to detail the floor system, make that, restore what it is and seal up your ducts, that's a fine approach. But if you are going to go to the sidewalls, you really want to deal with at least the moisture coming from the ground. There also could be radon, of course, coming from the ground. And by sealing it, you help to mitigate that as well.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And I want to switch to an email we got from Jeff, who's looking to replace the entire roof on his house, including the T-lock shingles, the cedar shingles, and spaceboard deck, looking at re-insulating afterward with spray foam insulation. In your opinion, where should that insulation be placed? On the floor of the attic or on the underside of the roof deck? I've heard arguments both ways, and I'm looking for more information. I have hot water heat and no HVAC equipment in the attic.
Okay, so if this is a standard ventilated attic with space, so you've got your ceiling and your insulation currently is down on your ceiling, and you've got obviously got your roof rafters, and you're just replacing the roof system up there, and the attic is...
He wants to do a little storage if he can.
A little storage space. So if it was me, I would put it down on the ceiling and not worry about conditioning that attic whatsoever. And I have some cold storage up there that I've built some platforms above the insulation. It can be spray foam. You might want to, at that point, you'd be vacuuming out any existing fiber insulation in that ceiling, clean it up, apply spray foam. If that's the route you wanted to go, where you maybe apply an inch or something of spray foam over all the top plates and just detail all the possible leaks in that ceiling. And then, of course, you could increase the spray foam insulation on top of that, but it's expensive, so I'm not an advocate for putting 6 inches of R7 per inch of spray foam over on the ceiling, right, and within the attic, because it's not going to be worth the money. You can get that R50, R60 with a fiberglass or a cellulose insulation much less expensive. Save that spray foam, that closed cell spray foam, for if you're going to renovate that attic and make it a living space and you want it to be warm up there, then apply it to the underside of the roof deck and keep it warm in the attic.
And the only other thing I would add to that is that in older homes, a lot of times we see a relatively small framing members, whether it's the ceiling has maybe only 2x6s or 2x4s sometimes, yeah. And then the roof rafters might be 2x4s or 2x6s. And so that's one time when utilizing the spray foam starts to potentially make sense, because there's just not enough space to have a fiberglass or cellulose product on the floor or this or on the underside of the roof deck to get the R value you need. But I would agree with John. I mean, if you're rarely going to go up there and you can seal the hatch or the stairway well, then insulate the floor.
Jim in Wauwatosa, hello. Thanks for calling.
Sure, yeah, I installed a bathroom fan in the ceiling of my bathroom and then ran the pipe out the sidewall. And I noticed this winter, especially, there was like cold air blowing through that fan. I went up in the attic and insulated the pipe well, but it seems like there's just a little flap between the outside and the air blowing inside the house that way.
Yeah, that's a common thing that we see. Without retrofitting or adding anything, there is just a simple, often just a plastic, or if you're lucky, a metal backdraft damper in the fan unit. Something that we've occasionally installed for our clients, there are butterfly dampers that can be integrated into the ductwork. You have to be careful because with moisture and freezing and all that, you know, you don't want something to get frozen shut. There are some dampers that can be installed into a duct that will greatly reduce that kind of fresh air backdrafting that you'll see when the fan is not operating.
And I had I'm just a little side story here on myself. I had this is two houses ago, I think. I looked around the corner of the house one day and saw a sparrow going into the side of the house, and it was going into the fan, the blower area, and it made a nest in there. And it was packed. There had been several nests that had been put in that duct.
It's a great, you know, throughout the year, you've got warm, moist air coming out of that. It's a great place to build a home, really.
Well, and now I notice that some sparrows going into my neighbor's house. So I think he's got the same issue. I'm going to have to break the news to him on that. Yeah. I've made sure that never has happened again. It's always something to think about.
Yeah, we see that on dryer vents and fans. And it's often with those little vinyl, like horizontal flap. They're about a 1-inch flap, and they're four or five of them on the square.
The birds know how to flip those up, yeah. And then they go.
Well, and one of them gets stuck open, and you've got your invitation right there.
But they also know how to flip them open. I watched the one doing that to my neighbor's home.
Nice.
Get a recording of that one, Larry.
David and Vernon, it's your turn. Hi, David.
Hi, guys. Older home, and I want to re-insulate my attic. This heating bill just killed me this year with spray foam insulation. And I'm having a hard time finding information out about open cell and closed cell. What's better? What's going to work for my needs better for me?
Okay. Mm-hmm. John, what do you think?
So right now, we have an attic, right? It's a ventilated attic space, and it's
yep.
And again, same questions, right? It's not used for living space or walk-up attic or anything like that.
It's a walk-up attic, but I don't plan on doing anything. If anything, it would just be cold storage, so I would be just insulating the ceiling part. I'd have the chutes and everything in, so yeah.
Yeah, and then does it have a wood floor down right now so you can walk around up there?
No, it does not.
Does not, okay. So we use spray foam. Because everybody knows we spray that foam and it seals and plugs holes at the same time that it insulates, right? And it has a higher insulating value per every inch that you install, so you can get the R value with half the thickness. But again, we come back to an R value is an R value. So an R50 spray foam insulation job is the same thermal characteristics as an R50 cellulose job or R50 fiberglass. So we don't think we're going to get a superior insulating value because we use spray foam if we use the right thickness. And so think about that in terms of cost. We use that spray foam to plug the holes, and this seems to be a reoccurring theme here. We want to plug the holes, and the spray foam is fast, it's easy and effective to do that. So we want to apply that material in its most appropriate application, and that's over the holes.
Right.
As Chad said, if we had limited space with a 2x4 roof rafter, then why we're limited on our thickness that we can install, and we want to go right to that closed cell spray foam that is acting like a vapor barrier up in those roof rafters, right? An open cell allows a little moisture transport. There's actually some open cell spray foams that if you're worried about off gassings or, you know, indoor air quality, there's products that I think are probably a little more benign on the open cell market. So that would be one reason you would go with an open cell. But the open cell is insulating value is equivalent to fiberglass or cellulose, right? It's 3.5 to 4 per inch. Mm-hmm. So you're not getting the bang for the buck if you've got a tight spot and you want to maximize the R value. You wouldn't go with a open cell spray foam.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I got 2x8 floor joists up there, so it wouldn't be really a space issue. It's just kind of I mean, there's so much information on the internet about closed cell and open cell, and I just get so confused.
Yeah, and maybe that's not even the question to ask at the moment, right? The question is, okay, you want to cut your utility bill down, and I got to make the lid of that house and the ceiling as tight as I can before I insulate it, and it's great. There's no floorboards. It may require a good quality contractor might have a vacuum machine to pull that out, and you spray foam the top of that house. Don't worry about making the house too tight. I don't think that's going to be a concern. You have an older house. There's other places for that home is going to have air leaks, but you want to do a bang-up job on that ceiling from an air tightness and use the spray foam there. But when it comes to capturing the R value that you want of an R50, you don't do that with spray foam if you got the room, right? There's no reason to do that.
Hmm. And a hybrid approach is also possible. It's not uncommon to go in and use that spray foam, put in an inch of foam to seal everything up well, hit every nook and cranny, give yourself that excellent vapor barrier and R value right down on top of the ceiling, and then fill it up with cellulose. And that way you're, you know, if you can afford to go that path, that's a way to get a little bit more R value for your dollar without passing up that opportunity to do some extra air sealing and get a little bit of extra R value in a space. I mean, you know, 8 inches, it's going to be hard to get in enough cellulose to have what you'd really want. If you put in 4 inches of the closed cell foam, you'd probably be pretty happy with that.
Right. So, I mean, that's the joist height, right? And then you've got room above that, right? Is that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like I said, I was just kind of maybe wanting to put like cold storage up there so I don't want to go over the top of them. You know,
go over the top with them, put that 14 inches in there, and then build a wood platform that you can take just one step up and you're on top of a platform for your storage.
Yeah, we've often gone into when homeowners want to have some storage and they want it to be cold storage, we build a second layer of framing up there so that you've got 14 inches or even 18 inches if you can give up that headroom in the attic and fill that up with cellulose. And
yeah, there you go. I was thinking about your suggestion thinking of my own home when we did this total remodel on we used foam at each floor level. You know, where one floor met the other
in the ring joist.
Yeah,
yes.
And then dense pack insulation for the rest of the and that was that's been excellent. I mean, no problems there.
Yeah, that's a great way to go. And the issue there is, you know, where the floor framing goes all the way out to the exterior wall, you can't really dense pack that because it'll fill up your floor.
Yeah.
In between the floors. So.
There you go. David, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting about home building with our two guests, Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking with Chad Spate and John Viner about home building and repair. You can join in. Give us an email at talk@wpr.org or call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can post a photo or a question. And a question, if you'd like, on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. Paul in West Bend has a question for you guys. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning. I had two friends that had some real high humidity, damp basements where water vapor was moving through the concrete block walls. And after some rain, there were actually water infiltrating between the concrete floor and the basement concrete block walls. In any case, made the problem go away. They had enough dimension from on the outside of the basement wall, from grade up to the start of the wood plate, there was enough dimension that we took and raised the grade at the foundation, at the basement wall, 5 inches and tapered it away about 4 to 4.5 feet with a good a clay material, a good Wisconsin red clay, compacted it. And then we laid down, in this instance, we laid down a 45 mil EDPM membrane, or you could use a 2 layers of 6 mil visqueen. And after that was placed, we brought in some river stone and placed the river stone down. and that shunted all the water that either came off from overflowing gutters or downspouts. It shunted that water at least 4.5 feet away from the basin walls, and it eliminated the problem. So that's one way to don't fight water. You got to get rid of it.
Right. Yeah. It does run downhill. Right. So that sounds like a great approach. It sounds like a very durable, long lasting. Way to take on that problem.
Yeah, good going, Paul. I think you're going to be happy with your result. It sounds like you're already happy with your result. Appreciate it very much. We have more callers. Who are we going to go to next? Let's go to Ben in Mountain, Wisconsin. You're next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, guys, thanks very much. Hey, I got one. I've got a 1974 home. It's a two-story. The upper level is smaller than the lower level, so it has roof all the way around it. So on the eave side, which is the front and back of my house, there's like a 3-foot strip of roofing for the lower level, you know. Mm-hmm. You can walk around the whole upper level. So we were re-roofing it a few weeks back, had to replace some sheathing on that overhang for the lower level, had it off, and essentially you can look right through the floor rafters, I guess, or the floor joists for the second level, the ceiling for the lower level. And, you know, it's got vented soffits, so basically, and they, 1974, they placed a little piece of pink insulation that you could move with the breath of my, you know. So basically I took it out of there, and I can look right through the floor joists from one side of my house to the other. And then it's open soffit, so basically I got cold air going from one side to the other.
Oh, yeah. Boy, those are fun to find. You know,
so I'm going to. We just had one piece of sheathing off, so you know I'm in a panic mode. I'm like, oh, are we going to rip this hole off? I'm going to insulate this, and they're like, do it later when you replace your soffit. So this fall, I'm going to replace my soffit, so I'll have access to that to insulate it. I just wanted to know the proper way. Which, listening to you guys over the years, I think I might know, but I didn't know if there was any consequences to. You know, sealing that up if there needed to be any kind of air movement or, you know, whatever, you know. So any recommendations you got there would be great.
Well, the ideal thing to do is to leave a path for air to continue to vent the roof deck. So if you can leave an inch to ideally an inch and a half or 2 inches of space from the roof deck down, and then seal up the rest of that space. There are a variety of ways you can create that area for the ventilation to happen. There are foam ventilation strips that can go up. There are some cardboard strips that can be stapled up to leave that place for the air to flow. And you can even attach with either wood or foam board, something to create a baffle. And then you're going to want to fill up the space towards the home, the heated home, to seal that up, to insulate it and air seal it. And if you have the time and the inclination, I would recommend looking in as you look in that soffit towards the heated home, I would attach a board or a baffle that you can either foam or dense pack up to in each one of those floor joists. Because the problem is that if you just put a loose material into that floor system, it's going to, over time, fall to the ground, and air will still be flowing above your pile of insulation. So you need to do something to seal up those cavities.
So, Ben, and I want to make sure we're clear. This is a first floor little eyebrow roof on the first floor, so it's not a second floor ventilated attic. So this isn't a ventilated space at the moment, is it? Or other than just the soffit venting?
Correct. It's a 3-foot basic kind of right. Overhang, if you want to call it, that runs. That meets up to my second floor.
So there's no attic there. Yeah. So
no ventilation needed. Just fill that thing up.
We want to.
Thanks, John.
You know, we want to clarify, as we pull down that soffit, or ideally, if you were replacing your roof and you had your sheathing off, that's the perfect time to get in there and put solid blocking so that
right? You don't want to pull that soffit or the roof off and be able to reach your arm into the floor system where all your recessed lights are, right? I mean, that's a problem. So then we put a solid blocking, whether it's foam or even wood blocking, in each joist cavity so it's solid and you can nowhere stick your arm from that little tiny attic space into the floor system, right? Just something that's secure. It's going to last a long time. We use a little bit of that spray foam to seal all the leaks and the cracks. And then we have that option. I guess we have a ceiling of the first floor below to insulate that, really, depending on the space. We do dense pack. Even the low-income weatherization programs will dense pack those tight cavities with the cellulose product. And then we get rid of the perforated soffit, and we don't put a vented soffit back into that. That soffit area. We don't want to stop all movement after we've blocked the floor joist, air sealed it, and filled it with insulation.
But essentially, so I'm on board with everything you said, and I understand that. So, but if we seal that off, if I have the soffit off from below, and we put, like 2-inch foam block, like to block it, and then spray foam over the top of it, the spray foam doesn't just fall on the ceiling down below, block all that off. There's not going to be any, because then the heat will transfer from the lower level to the upper level because it's not insulated in between, but at least we're not basically having cold air run between the two floors.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah.
And so then from a moisture standpoint, if you have recessed lights in that first floor ceiling or any penetrations or at the top plates of the first floor, those are what you've got to make airtight. So again, the double top plates of the first floor wall should be spray foamed so that they're tight, all recessed lights, all electrical, any penetrations, so that we get no moisture migration from the first floor into that new tight attic that you just created.
There you go. Good luck, Ben. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Bud in Milwaukee a chance to join us before our news break here. Bud, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, no problem. I'll have to go pretty quick then. Hey, I got the CertainT shingles that were in that class action lawsuit. It's a 13-year-old roof with 30-year-old shingles on it. It's 30-year shingles on a 13-year-old roof that look like they're 60 years old. All the corners are curling up and so forth. Can you just put a second course over the top of curled up roofing shingles versus a whole tear off?
No, you don't want to do that. Whenever you've got a roof layer that is compromised like that, then it really needs to be removed, because any shingle roof is pliable, and so if you put it down on an uneven surface, it's going to conform to that uneven surface. And that can be a good thing with little variations, but if you've got this curling and failure happening, then it really needs to be removed, unfortunately. But then you get to start over, whether or not proper ice and water shield was installed in all the appropriate places 13 years ago, I would say probably not, and so it's going to be an opportunity to get that right. And so your new roof will have both the underlayment that it should have, and it'll have a nice uniform surface so that it'll last as it should.
Yeah, CertainT gave me like $800 out of for the $4,000 roof to get redone.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but on the flip side, you did get 13 years out of it. But it's of course, obviously, you should have gotten at least 20. So yeah. I'm sorry.
But do you at least get 20 out of a 30-year roof, eh?
Yeah, well, $700 better than a stick in the eye.
Yeah. $700 is better than no bucks, that's for sure. Thanks a lot for calling. We had a minute here, Jan emailed, in a 30-year-old home, wood fireplace, has since been retrofitted with gas. The outside of the fireplace covering doesn't go all the way down to the ground. There's a space in between the ground and the end of the fireplace venting. We've noticed a leak there where the earth meets the basement wall in this area, and it looks like mold is even forming. That may be too much of a topic to handle here in 30-40 seconds, but
yeah, I'm not sure if water in the basement is related to the fireplace, right? Or I mean, that's just a little bump out, it sounds like, at that location. And
what kind of a contractor? We really wondering what kind of a contractor would you recommend they bring in to look at it?
Well, probably I would want to have the fireplace inspected to make sure that's as it should be. And then after that, it sounds like maybe a moisture management situation.
All right.
Basement, water ceiling sort of thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. There you go. That's who you need to talk to. And you got it straight from Chad Spade and John Viner. They're going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. News is next, and then we'll be back with our guests. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your home, building, repair, extreme weather. We can do it all here with our guests today. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guests. And always great to have them along. And certainly, please feel free to join in at 800-642-1234. Margaret in Madison has a question for you guys. Hi, Margaret. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have a GE microwave. It's a venting microwave over the stove. It vents directly outside. It's on an outside wall. In the winter, it is freezing cold and literally frost in the microwave. And I've measured the temperature. You know, I put a thermometer in there sometimes, and it's been, you know, 10 degrees in the microwave in the morning. I mean, really cold. And cold air pours in through the, you know, the little vent things that are underneath. And so I've resorted to magnetic sheets that I have cut to fit those and stuck on, you know, put them on. But that only keeps, you know, some of the cold air from pouring in to the house. But the microwave is very cold. Is this something that you've typically seen with microwaves that vent directly outside? Is there anything we can do about it? It's only 3 years old. Our house was remodeled about 3 years ago.
Yep. It's a common problem. And whenever the duct for any appliance, whether it's a bathroom fan or a microwave or a hood over an oven, when that duct goes right out the wall, there's no buffer between the outside and the inside. And so really about the only strategy that we have used, there are dampers that are made typically. I mean, we purchase them through a heating wholesaler. They're not things that you can typically buy off the shelf at the hardware store, but they are high quality dampers, spring-loaded dampers with appropriate gaskets that will fit in almost any size standard duct. And we will install a damper like that whenever we suspect that this problem will happen. Just it's a quality control measure from our perspective. But then occasionally if we miss it or someone just has the problem or whatever we've done isn't good enough, then we can resort to maybe some other damper that can solve the problem. So chances are the duct that's coming out of the wall is maybe 10 inches by 3 inches or 3 by 12 or something like that. There's some standard rectangular sizes for those microwaves. There are dampers made that can be inserted into that will only allow air to exit the house. They close up when there's no fan operating. And that should resolve the problem. And depending on the type of hood that was installed on the exterior, that will determine how difficult it is to get into that duct and to install a damper. But that's what I would recommend to fix it.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Appreciate your call, Margaret. And looking for your call at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Carolyn in Milwaukee next. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn. Hi, Larry. This is Carolyn. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering if they had some recommendations on this. We have a folding stairway into our attic and wondered how we could best insulate that. We did have some block foam glued onto it. Some of that's actually coming off. So just kind of wondering what you do with something like that so you don't have a lot of heat loss.
Yeah.
There are a couple of products on the market that I think it's probably worth purchasing versus trying to build your own foam box. This is where the stairs actually fold up and it flips up into the attic. So if you're dealing with irregular shapes and you've got to build a box that encompasses those stairs that may stick up into the attic a foot or a foot and a half or so. So I would look at... might be called attic tents, there or attic hatch covers, and do a Google on that, and you're going to find a couple of products. One is actually a zipper one that installs, and it's a fabric, and as you pull down the stairs, you go up a couple of steps, and you operate a zipper to open up this fabric that allows you access into the attic. So that's one way. It's probably not insulated as heavily as some others, but it may be convenient for you depending on capabilities of installation. So otherwise, we're building a foam box, but the foam box, it doesn't stay rigid. It's hard to put a gasket down and latch it nice and tight and have it to be long-lasting. So Google attic tents or attic covers for stairs, and I think either of those products are probably that you're going to find there are going to be a good bet for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you think, in your opinion, there is quite a bit of heat loss that goes with putting something like that in?
The attic stairway?
Yeah, just having an attic stairway.
Certainly there is, and long as it can latch and we can get it airtight, it takes up, 3 by 5 feet or something like that, where it's just not, the insulating value isn't there, but it's just something we typically are going to put up with so we have convenient access to the attic. So it's not a deal breaker, or whether you're probably not seeing your utility bill go up because you have it, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be that small.
That's the old homestead. The parents, that's exactly what we had, and I don't think they ever put a cover on. I think it was always just pull the stairs down, push them back up, and we mm-hmm. actually had fun as kids, I think,
pulling them
down and climbing up in there and fooling around.
It might be just a localized comfort problem where that stairway in the second floor, the attic, a little breeze has come by that we want to stop, so stop that draft.
Thanks again, Carolyn. Cormac, your turn from Green Bay. Hi.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. Here's my situation. We just moved into a house here 2 years ago, so I've gone through two full winters and summers in this house. What I'm seeing is the furnace in the basement is not pushing the heat in the winter and the cool in the summer up to all the rooms on the second floor. In the master bedroom, we're fine. I'm cooking in the winter and I'm freezing in the summer, but my kids aren't getting any airflow into their bedrooms on the second floor. So my question is that this need of a bigger fan, a different type of furnace, complete new ductwork, something like that?
Maybe.
For
all
those. Maybe, yeah. Or maybe not.
Yeah. Oftentimes it's more than one issue that is causing the problem, and I'll be honest, it can be difficult to fix, to push more heat places if everything's in place and the ductwork's already run, it's installed, it's running up walls, getting more supply air, which is the primary concern, versus a return air. Mm-hmm. We want to push more of those BTUs into that room or extract those BTUs in the summertime. So if we get lucky and we walk down into the basement and we see the ductwork and we identify those branch runs, the metal ducts that are going up into a wall, and we have somebody on the second floor, I'm assuming it's a two-story house.
Correct, yes.
Somebody's yelling down the register and you got a black marker, and the first thing you do is label each one, what bedroom it is that it's going to. It's just nice to get your hands around which duct is going where. And then sometimes these houses actually have manual dampers in them that you may not know about, right? So
Oh, okay.
And
that was the case in one of our homes, and we once we got that fixed, the problem went away.
So it could be many things, and hopefully it's the simpler of them, and that's making sure that you know you can identify these metal handles, or maybe it's a metal wing nut a couple of feet from the main trunk line in each of the small round branch ducts that go to the individual spaces. So make sure you have those or don't have them. And if sometimes you have them and they just get closed from somebody else didn't want the heat someplace or they get moved. So make sure that they're all open as a starting point and you've labeled all your ducts so you know which going where. After that, maybe there you can increase fan speed, right? So that there may be on heating or cooling, usually the cooling speed's usually the highest is a trend. But for heating, there may be an opportunity to increase that fan speed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something a technician would have to go in and maybe help you assess whether that's a possibility. Sometimes if you got wood floors and you've got registers that belong in wood floors, they're very restrictive. So sometimes the register itself can be a problem if it's small and narrow. Mm-hmm. And try removing that register once, and boy, do you feel a breeze coming out where before you didn't. Crazy things happen where somebody wants a very decorative floor register and they're nice wood floor and they're uncomfortable, but they sure got a nice floor register.
Well, my concern on this is, you know, we have the venting that goes kind of through the box, the metal box through the floor to the center of the house, and then it kind of goes to one edge and then kind of goes up. So it's not that tubular pipe that comes right out of the furnace. It's got to go through that little area there. So it's got to go quite a ways just to make it up to the top of the house. So my question was the correct furnace put into that house, or was it's a 3,300 square foot home? So, is there a break off where you need a second furnace for a certain size house? Or
sometimes that's a nice, easy, assured fix is a second furnace. And I can't answer those questions without really doing some energy modeling of that home to determine its heat load and heat gains within that building, and understanding windows and window orientation. And so it gets a little more sophisticated to understand what size of furnace that you need. If you have an attic space and your kids are going to be in the house for a long time and you want to keep them comfortable, then a second furnace can be an easy fix. You know, maybe somebody put in the wrong size duct and supply duct in the basement, but you know, each time I've tried to make that enhancement or change, I just don't get the bang for the buck. Or I might increase the airflow a tiny bit, but you know, it never makes the aha moment of now I'm comfortable when I start retrofitting those types of duct systems.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I remember our furnace in the one house was just completely out of balance, and it got it adjusted. I had a furnace guy come in, and actually, because I didn't know what was going on, and he said, "Oh, look at here, He started fiddling around a little bit with those little wing nuts that were up on top of the duct, and suddenly everything was fine.
Yep.
Harold and Superior, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. Just so thankful for your program. You guys are just incredible, your knowledge. I have a porch that's under 200 square foot on the roof, maybe 8 by 18 or something. I have to measure yet on the roof and not just the porch. But we brought home some roll roofing, and then we found out that, no, you need to buy 5 gallons of this roll-on glue, and that was $150-$170 for that, and then some kind of metal to flash where it bends over behind the gutters and take your gutters off, which we can't do, and so on and so forth. And it, all of a sudden, this, you know, what we thought was going to be a $100 fix is a lot more. We have a metal roof now, and it has a little bit of rust on it, but it's been painted over the years, and we just haven't painted it, so it's it's starting to show that. And the seams on it, we've always kept tarred. And we thought, well, rather than paint the roof, maybe we just cover it with a roll roofing. And I don't know now if we should. I would prefer maybe that stuff where you peel the back off and you put it right down. My wife does not want white. We'd have to find it in a black. Otherwise, I don't know, we could just put tar the whole thing with some kind of roof coating. Unfortunately, what's available at our local Menards is just white, and my wife won't have that. And I've also thought about a metal roof like I put on my side porch, but we do have the two angles where it tips down to the outside like on a hip roof, and I don't know if you can join that metal type of metal on that seam. It sounds maybe like it'd be overkill, but the snow would slide off of it, which would be really nice, you know, easier, because we get a lot of snow buildup and we have to shovel. So your thoughts on that?
Well, it sounds like a challenging situation, and it's something that I would have to say I'd almost want to see a picture of it to get a full understanding of the challenges you face. But I will say that it sounds like you have a metal roof now, some sort of metal that you had alluded to. It's rusting. So, you know, certainly I'm sorry that it's rusting. You know, it's a reminder that, you know, so many of these surfaces, if we maintain them on a home, they'll last a long time. And then once they get past that point of no return, you probably have to look at some sort of tear-off and replacement. The metal roof options you have are likely to be the most expensive of all the things you're thinking about. Some sort of a roll-on product, roll roofing material to layer, whether that's you know, a hot tar or whatever it is, again, depending on the pitches and the angles and all those details. I would defer to one of my roofing specialists, but, you know, a lot of the tar and peel-off products are going to be on the less expensive side, and then when you go to the metal, you're going to be spending more money, but it will be something that you can maintain and have last for many more years. So, yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. You know, a little bit to think about there, but the metal roof sounded really good to me. And that, but then you know, you start thinking about what it's going to cost.
Yeah, and a lot of times the metal, even the standing seam roof. I mean, it's. I don't have the tools to cut the materials that are up there. You know, that's just not something. We don't work with metals that are that thick. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Thanks again, Harold. Diane in Madison. Hello to you. Diane, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hi. We have a cottage on a lake that is not winterized, and the lower level is made out of cinder block, and the back of it is about 3 feet, 2 feet maybe from a hill that goes all the way up to the second level. And last year, because of all of the snow, that space between the cinder block and the hill filled up with snow. It eroded the hill a bit, and we had this flood that came in for the first time in 20 years. It came into the cottage with sort of a mud that just filled up the floor. So we've been considering putting a siding on that cinder block, and would like to put something on that would prevent this from happening in the future. And I was looking for your input on that.
So, I'm not sure I understand exactly the situation, but if I think the goal is to take that cinder block wall and to waterproof it, and then protect
exactly.
It. Okay.
Right. So that melting snow can't seep in through the cinder block, mildew our interior drywall, and then flood the floor.
The challenge is going to be sealing and waterproofing the entire cinder block wall, because I'm going to imagine that this wall does go down below grade, correct?
No, it doesn't.
It's fully exposed? Okay.
It's fully exposed.
Well, so you may be able to apply a product to that that can waterproof it, and if you are able to seal it all the way down to the ground, to the footing, and then protect it with a siding material. I mean, often the siding that we have on our homes, other than being there for beauty, it's really there to protect whatever material is behind it that's keeping the water and the wind out. So it sounds like maybe that's what you need to do.
Chad, is there any particular product that differs between a poured concrete wall and a concrete block? I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm a little bit at a loss because we encounter concrete block every now and then. I mean, probably 20% of the homes we work on in Madison might be, you know, the cinder block. But
we cinder block.
Yeah, well, the real old-fashioned.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, we work with some waterproofing specialists, some contractors that we bring in to help us solve those problems, and I'm not quite sure what would be the most appropriate product. I do know one of the challenges of a cinder block wall is that if the cavities were left open, often they fill up with water, and they can really create problems for the homeowner because they literally give off moisture unlike any other masonry wall when that happens.
That doesn't
sound
good.
Yeah. Yeah. So basement waterproofing specialist for that.
That's what I would recommend. Yeah. Yeah. And there are a number of products. Some of them get applied by brush. Some of them are peel and stick. And then there are a number of products that can just be put up against that to help to waterproof it. And then you can overlay it with another material.
Mm-hmm. And you can also remove the wall and put a new one in.
That's true.
It happened in one of my houses. I've had every bad experience that you can imagine has happened in one house of mine or the other.
I think we need a show, Larry, on Larry's homes.
You can just go back and take a look at my homes, and everything imaginable happened. We had a leaning-in wall that was a result of something. Too late to go into it now, but we wound up having to put in suddenly a new basement wall, which added a few thousand bucks to the overall project.
I'm sure it did.
Oh, John, Chad, thank you so much. Chad is the owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. Go to chadscarpentry.com. You can take a look at what his business is like. John Viner is with the Energy Center of Wisconsin. And again, they have a site as well. Go to my Facebook page. You can get a link right there. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.